Here's where the story ends. Tintin Out featuring... Well, it's disappeared now. Who was it? I don't know. Tintin Out. Anyway, here's where the story ends. I see what I did there because actually it's where the story begins because I have a storyteller in the studio with me, Chip Colquhoun from Snail Tales. Good morning, Chip.
Good morning again.
Yes, nice to have you back. You're back because you're very busy at the moment, aren't you?
I am rather.
Which is great because it means that storytelling is out there and, you know, it's getting out there in the culture.
It's certainly vibrant here in Cambridge.
Excellent news. So tell us a little bit about Snail Tales, first of all.
Well, we're a storytelling group that has been around for nearly a decade. We actually celebrate our 10th birthday this year. It was founded by myself and another storyteller called Amy Robinson, and we have since been going all around the world with our storytelling. Most recently, we've been doing a lot of work here in Cambridgeshire, so like the reason I was here last time, our show The First King of England in a Dress, which is going on national tour but starting here in Cambridgeshire. Also, this research that we're doing is based here in Cambridge. But we have been in schools and theatres all over the country and all over the world.
And are these stories that are old folk tales or are they current stories? Are they all fiction or based on fact?
The simple answer to that question, Lee, is yes.
Yes, all of them.
All of the above. Most of what we do is traditional tales, so stories that have been passed on by storytellers before us for hundreds, if not thousands of years. A small selection are stories that are based on, say, local folklore, some of which could even be true. And for us, I suppose one of the things that makes Snail Tales as an organisation unique among storytellers is that we also do workshops with schools and children in which those children tell us stories, and we take those stories and add them to our repertoire as well. So a lot of the stories that I will be telling will actually be the fairy tales of tomorrow because they've been created by children today.
And I suppose, do you find that your children tell stories more naturally than adults?
Oh, well, not necessarily more naturally than adults, but I certainly disagree with this idea that some people have, that there are children out there who have no imagination. Like I said, I've been doing this job for about 10 years now, and I have never met a single child with no imagination. I think the difference between children and adults is that adults can convince themselves that they have no imagination. So you tend to see more of a scope between adults who are good at it and adults who don't really know what to do. But every single child has this ability, an innate ability, to tap into their imagination.
So you're conducting this research, and this is academic research. Is this something that's a new venture for Snail Tales?
Not exactly. In a way, we've been doing research since we started, because when we began, we didn't really know what we were doing, to be honest. We called ourselves storytellers, but we went in more as a sort of theatre and education group, doing little plays for schools in the Cambridge area. And it was as we started looking into what other storytellers were doing that we discovered that this art of storytelling has far more scope for certainly working in education. But it was in 2013 that we did an EU Lifelong Learning Programme project, which was based again here in Cambridge. But the way EU programmes work is they involve teachers from other countries in the EU. In this case, it was Turkey. So I think they're a country who were moving towards the EU rather than actually being in it. But we had all of these teachers come from Turkey over to Cambridge to work on a project about using storytelling in schools. And one of the UK head teachers who brought her school onto this project had been really, really enthusiastic about our work and had worked with us on numerous occasions before. Was really looking forward to working with us again. And just before this project began, she retired, which meant that a new head teacher came on board the project. And at this first meeting with all of these really important Turkish officials, really important UK officials, and all of these teachers and head teachers, she just said in front of everybody, "What's the point? Why should I dedicate the resources of my school to this project? You know, there were going to be the costs of organising supply teachers, sending teachers to Turkey. It was going to be a huge expense for her school, and she wanted to know where was the proof that doing all of this to bring storytelling into her school was actually going to benefit her children," which was a really valid point. It was valid for two reasons. Firstly, because of the financial thing, but also, at that stage, there was no scientific evidence to back up the idea that storytelling works for children in schools. There are plenty of, I think you call them qualitative studies or anecdotal studies, where scientists have watched a storyteller go into a school and they've collected feedback from the children, the teachers and the parents, all of which has usually been positive, about the experience of having a storyteller come into their school. But those sorts of studies tend to get discounted by hard-nosed head teachers like this one, and also policy makers, the people in government, simply because they are not quantitative. They don't have a controlled experiment where you can say the storytelling was definitely better than not doing the storytelling. So that was in 2013, and that was pretty much the moment where we decided we wanted to see this happen.
We wanted to prove that it worked.
Exactly. Partly because, you know, it would make sure that when we go to schools and we say we think that doing this is going to help your children, we actually know that we're telling the truth. I think most teachers out there, and certainly most storytellers, have this just core belief that it's going to be doing something beneficial for children. But like I said, it hadn't been scientifically proven, and that is what this project's all about.
So how do you scientifically prove whether storytelling in schools is beneficial then?
Well, that's been the hard part, because what you need in a truly scientific experiment is you need a control group. And for the best part of 3 years, we have really struggled to find that, mainly because teachers know it's going to work.
By a control group, you mean a group of children who aren't experiencing storytelling.
Exactly. You see, although there are many children out there who don't get day-to-day access to storytelling, as soon as a school hears about a study being done into the benefits of it, they don't want to be the control group because they think it's going to be beneficial to have the storytelling. So we would always be struggling to find those schools who would be willing to be the control group, willing to have children potentially not perform as well as children who were getting some special training or whatever it was. Back at the start of last year, we had the benefit of one school very close to where we're based in Soham, who were a two-tiered school, and they agreed to do the scientific research with us so that we would work with one half of their school while running the study, and after the study had completed, we would work with the other half. So for them, it was absolutely perfect. At that stage, we weren't working with the University of Cambridge, which is the key difference between then and now. But that same school was a part of the Diocese of Ely Multicademia Trust, which have, really given us loads of support for this research and are now supplying other schools for us to run the study in.
So what's happening? You're going into classrooms and doing your stuff, and then
not
are they
quite,
no? Okay.
No. You see, that this is all one of the exciting things about having the University of Cambridge on board, because when we were doing our research back in 2013 to last year, we had our ideas of what made a scientific study. So yes, we were going into the schools ourselves, we were working with the children, and we knew about the importance of the control group. Now we have our researcher from Homerton College in there. She has brought in all of the other really important scientific variables, one of which is scalability and repeatability. Two of which are scalability and repeatability. And what this means is that instead of working with the children, I'm actually working with the teachers, and I am training them essentially to become better storytellers. Now, this is scalable because it means that were we to extend the project, we'd be able to work with a far greater number of schools than the ones we're working with at the moment. It's also repeatable because the training that I deliver in schools, it's something that any storyteller could do. It wouldn't have to be me, it wouldn't have to be someone from Snail Tales. And that's really important because we're not trying to run a study which shows the work of Snail Tales is good for schools. We're trying to run a study which shows the work of storytellers is good for schools, or storytelling is good for schools. So we're delighted to have the University of Cambridge on board, because it really is bringing all sorts of new angles and making the research itself more exciting.
So they will compare and contrast between the experiences of the two groups of children, those who've had the stories told to them by their teachers who've worked with you, and those who haven't.
Yes, and if it was just comparing the experiences, then it would be very similar to a lot of the anecdotal studies that are out there at the moment. Again, one of the things that's really making this research exciting and new is the fact that it is also looking at pupil progress in literacy, so their writing and their speaking and their reading, but also the progress that they make in numeracy as well. So yes, we'll be finding out how the children and the teachers feel it's gone. We at Snail Tales have an idea that one of the reasons it's so beneficial for children is that it improves their confidence, it improves their concentration, and that's something that we'll be able to know for sure once the study's done. But we'll also have some hard evidence to lay before policymakers. Whichever way it goes, this is the impact that storytelling has on children's results.
And when you're saying storytelling in a classroom, what do you exactly do you mean by that? We all remember sitting around the feet of our teacher at the end of the day as she'd read, you know, I don't know, Pippi Longstocking or something. Is it that, or are you talking about putting historical events in some sort of story, even maths in some sort of framework?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a little bit of all of the above. It's good to know that you can remember the experience of sitting around your teacher's feet listening to stories, but I have gone into many schools where that's no longer the practice. Certainly, the national curriculum at the moment doesn't make that obligatory for schools. In fact, once you get to the age of 7, children don't even have to hear stories at all, not even read out. It's a recommendation, but it's not anything that teachers actually have to follow. So one of the things that we're testing with this study is just putting more storytelling into the school. So that would be the teacher sitting in front of her class, telling them a story, ideally telling rather than reading. And the difference for people who don't know is that when you're reading, you've got the book in front of you, you're reading somebody else's words. When you're telling, you are actually making direct eye contact with your audience the entire time. It's a very engaging art form. It's a very conversational art form. You know, it's very similar to what you and I are doing now. You know, you ask me questions, I give you answers back. Your questions are informed by what I say. That's kind of what storytelling is as well. When a storyteller's telling a story, they're constantly looking out for the responses of their audience to know how to adjust the tone or the direction of the story. So we do want to see some more of that going in. But yes, it would also be things like using the story to introduce a history topic, creating a story in order to present a mathematical problem or to present an area of geography that you're looking at. There are many ways that storytelling can be used, because the core principles of storytelling really are that engagement aspect, and also what we've come to term imaginative investment, which is essentially where you get the people who are involved in the lesson or the story or whatever involved in taking ownership over it. So if children are taking ownership over their lessons, they're going to be far more motivated to take part. They're going to be far more motivated to write. They're going to be far more interested in their subjects. And storytelling gives that sort of imaginative investment far more automatically. Have you heard of the pink elephant experiment?
No, I haven't.
You haven't? I'm sure many of your listeners will be picturing a pink elephant right now, or at least they'll know what a pink elephant looks like, even though pink elephants don't exist, or they exist very rarely. It's unlikely any of your listeners have actually seen a true-to-life pink elephant, unless they've seen Dumbo recently. So, yeah, the principle is that the moment you speak in any form of language, language is all conceptual, so everybody gets an idea of what you're meaning by putting a picture to it. Again, this doesn't have to be literal. It doesn't mean you actually put a picture of a pink elephant in front of your mind's eye, but you have an understanding of it. If asked, you could build a picture in your head of a pink elephant. And it's that sort of automatic conceptual process that all humans go through, which makes storytelling so great for activating this imaginative investment.
It sounds great, Chip. This is just primary at this level, is it? Just
for
primary
us,
schools?
Yes. For the researcher at Cambridge, I think she's actually simultaneously running a project on using science in storytelling, or storytelling in science, in Swavesey Village College, because that's where she's based during the week. Our research is particularly on 7 to 11, because when the government decided to reduce the amount of oracy in schools, obviously they took the oral component out from English lessons at GCSE level, but this had a knock-on effect right back to the primary level, where they effectively reduced all the requirements for speaking and listening, and we think it should be back there.
So this research, when will it be finished?
It will probably finish the data collection before the end of the summer term, so that's coming up to July. And we hope that the research will therefore be published sometime in August. So you're looking at a publication date, I say August, September.
And what will you do with it?
Well, the publications itself, or the work, the report itself, will be published in true scientific journals and education journals, so they will be seen by other scientists who we hope will peer review it, maybe repeat the study themselves and contact us for the data and so on. But most importantly of all, we already have interest from the Department for Education, Minister Nick Gibb, who is the Minister of State for Schools. The local MP for, East Cambridgeshire MP, Lucy Fraser. She's a member of the Education Select Committee, and she's got a very keen interest in this research as well. And what we'll be wanting to do is make sure that through them, this research is being seen by the key policymakers in our country, so they can see in front of them. You know, I'm talking hypothetically here. If our research actually proves that storytelling is going to be beneficial for children, and that our children do end up performing much better than children who don't get any storytelling, we hope that this will show storytelling should be an actual requirement in the national curriculum. Now, of course, there is always the possibility when you do things like this that things will go the other way. We may show that actually the children don't show any better progress. Maybe it's exactly the same as the control group, in which case we've shown that storytelling should still be a requirement. Not a requirement, a recommendation. It is still a very valid option for teachers to use. If we end up going the other way, though, the third way, which is that storytelling is detrimental to children's education, at least we will still have shown something. We'll have shown perhaps how the future of education research should be focused, but we'll also have shown, I hope, that storytelling is very valuable as entertainment, and that is something else that it can be highly useful for.
Well, it's very exciting. If your instincts are right and it shows what you believe it will show, then you're playing a part in shaping education policy.
Well, that's our hope, and I have to say, it's not just our instincts. I mean, of course it's our instincts because we're storytellers, we've been doing this for so long, but it's the instinct of every single teacher who books us, and we have worked with hundreds of thousands of children in schools all around the world. It's the instincts of so many people who, you know, I'm sure are listening to this and thinking, I enjoy stories. I remember stories from my school. I remember things by putting them into stories. Anybody who's got any inkling of how the human brain works is behind our research at the moment. So I'm pretty sure that when we come out of this, we will be able to change education policy for the better.
Well, good luck, Chip. People want to know more about the research, they can go to your website, snailtales.org. You're thinking of publication around about August, September, so do come back in. We may well see you before then, because you're so busy with all these different projects, but do put a note in your diary. I'd love to find out the outcome of that research. Thanks for coming in today. Nice to chat to you.
And to you.